and knock on our door.
Come knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too. Come and dance on our floor.
Come and dance on our floor.
Thank you for knocking on our door, and welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today is my good friend Dave Hill. Dave, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Danko. How you doing?
Great. I'm glad that you are on one of my podcasts now, as I was on one of yours.
Yes, yeah, totally. I'm honored.
Yeah, and I mean, I follow you on Instagram. I saw that you posted something that had to do something referencing Three's Company, and I immediately reached out for you to be a guest on the Regal Beagle podcast.
Oh yeah, my Three's Company. My love runs deep.
So you're a lifelong fan. You've watched every episode at least 10 times. Is that where I'm guessing?
I don't know about 10, but I mean, I'm old enough to, you know, I remember when it was primetime television.
Right.
Simpler time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad that you are a guest, you know, as we reach later end of the Three's Company series. We're on season 7, episode 3, Diamond Jack. It aired October 19, 1982, directed by Dave Powers, written by Ellen Gylass. Larry sets up Jack on a blind date with a jewel thief. Dave, what did you think of Diamond Jack?
Well, it was solid. The one thing about it, it's funny, as soon as I started watching it, I was taken back to being a little kid and just being like, oh yeah, I remember this. Terry becomes the roommate. Mr. Roper's long gone. Mr. Furley's on the scene. It was latter era. I could just feel it. I feel like it was a strong, it pretty much ticked all the boxes of what we look for in an episode of, though there is no, they don't go to the Regal Beagle in that episode. So I was a little disappointed in that. I had one question about this episode though.
Yeah.
See if you can answer this and it's probably a testament to my, slowness, but I didn't understand how that Jack blames the answering machine for the wrong number, but I don't understand why he said that.
Well, basically, I guess this podcast is always going to spoil. It's a spoiler podcast, but at the end of the episode, we find out that Larry, even though he set Jack up on a blind date, he never reveals the name at the top of the episode, so you don't know if it's Sally or Rita. So it was because of that little opening, the writers were able to sneak that by. So Jack takes the first call on the answering machine, and it's just so happens it's a woman who wants to meet him on the other end of the phone, and it wasn't Sally who Larry was setting up Jack with. It was a random woman who called a wrong number named Rita, who just happened to be a jewel thief. So
yeah.
That's why Jack hates the answering machine, because it you know, this...
Because she left the message on the machine. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It was, I thought, a real cheap ploy of the writers to make sure that Larry doesn't tell Jack who he's setting him up on a date. Like, he just leaves the apartment and goes on his merry way, and it's okay with Larry not telling Jack, and Jack doesn't even care whether or not Larry told him the name of the girl. So
yeah. They just get on with it.
Yeah, that was the only thing that I thought was, that's how you got this episode out. You squeaked this story
flawed
out. yeah but I, yeah
it was also I never thought about until today. I don't know why it took me so long to think about this, but I was like, why don't they have a 3-bedroom apartment?
True. Always thought about that myself, you know. Why does the guy get the whole room to himself and the girl's got to double up?
Yeah. Questions.
Nope. Janet received no privacy while living away from home for all those years. No privacy. No. She had to go to the washroom to get privacy. Yeah, this is true. I kind of bugged me about it as well. I don't know if it was just because of the set itself. For convenience sake, you know, the set that they were working on in the studio, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know why I'd never thought of it, literally, until this episode. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. A lot of things come back. When you go through these old episodes, you're like, wow, I can't believe they got away with that completely, you know, not just politically incorrect, like, but it's just downright offensive, mm-hmm. no matter how you slice it. So many times going through this series again.
You know, they should just slap a third door on the set.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, for sure.
That's hard.
Now, what did you think of the answering machine, the state-of-art answering machine that the girls bring home?
I was getting really stressed out about how they kept taking turns leaving. The answering machine was pretty awesome. I love that it came with the little microphone.
Yeah,
But then every time they would leave, you know, take turns leaving a message, I kept getting stressed out because I was like, "What? You keep talking over the top of the message. You can't do that. You have to hit record and then start. You can't just like finish a conversation and then Anyway, I was overanalyzing.
I think,
but it was pretty nice, like faux wood grain.
Yeah,
big as a toaster.
I thought it was. I guess it's the 1982 equivalent of like if someone comes home with like virtual reality glasses or something.
Yeah, which I'm not crazy about those either, I'll be honest. I'd rather have the answering machine.
Yeah, so another kind of flaw that I thought I found was, what'd you think of the cookies? You know, these are two-year-old cookies of Janet's, and they've turned green. They don't smell to Jack. They taste weird to him because he makes a face. But so he finds these cookies in the cupboard, but they're sitting in the front of the cupboard. He wouldn't have found these two-year-old cookies before that moment? Did you notice
that? Yeah, it was a little too easy. Plus, like, even as soon as he takes the bag out, they look like this bag of just hodgepodge cookies already. Like, it looks like they're just like a bunch of different flavors. And then, you know, I don't know what. To make cookies go moldy, you would have to like, you know, the whole thing. Yeah, I don't know. That was it. I wasn't buying that either. They would be stale, sure. But they're not going to get moldy unless you dump like a bunch of water in there.
Yeah, it's really weird. I guess the shelf life wasn't too long for those.
I guess not, but.
They're freshly baked.
But I will say, I was like, I would like some cookies. It you know, my neuro, whatever, something, you know, just went off.
Right.
I'll have cookies later today
result. It is like lunchtime, right? I mean.
Yeah, cookie time.
Yeah. And I must note a couple of things about Janet that was noted a few episodes ago. We went through Janet Wigs Out when she wears a blonde wig and gets a lot of men paying attention to her. That was one episode just last season in season 6. I noted that after that episode, Joyce DeWitt, who plays Janet, took a turn with her character and started becoming a little more goofy. And I just noticed it was starting to come out again in this episode. Just the way she talked, a little more goofier than, you know, she's supposed to be the level-headed, smart Janet, and now she's kind of acting a little more goofy, which I guess she's getting used to, you know, being playing opposite, you know, someone as huge as John Ritter, you know, and keeping up with him, of course. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, not to pop the hood too much on the show, but I really think, you know, as best I can tell, Joyce DeWitt, you know, I think she had to claw and scrape to, you know, because they had Suzanne Summers, and then I think, you know, they really told her that they were going to let her run with the ball some more, and then they get Terry in there. I think she was probably just trying to, you know, get some screen time.
Yeah, by, yeah.
Just hamming it up a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, maybe you're right. I just liked it in the early part of the series when Janet was more level-headed. And although, you know, she's always been kind of my favorite, you know, like I always thought she was like uber hot looking, like, and this episode, totally. Same thing, you know. So I just kind of wish she was more level-headed. Maybe that's just me projecting what I like, you know. But yeah. I'm starting to, you know, figure out, just watching how Janet, the character of Janet, takes a bit of a change as the series is ending.
Even her hair, like she gets that, now she has like this sort of straight shag going in this, which would look great today, I have to say.
Yeah.
I remember there was like some E! True Hollywood Story of Three's Company, and sounds like Joyce DeWitt, she said they lied to my face. That's the soundbite that jumps out at me. I hate to think of it.
Well, I think not enough credit is given to Joyce DeWitt because she had to keep up with John Ritter comedically, and I think she did. You know, I think she was able to do that, and not enough is given to her. You know, credited to her. I was always a big fan of Joyce DeWitt.
Oh yeah, she's good. Who is the actress that plays Terry?
Priscilla Barnes plays Terry. Yeah.
I liked her. And then Bruce Springsteen's wife is after that, right?
No, that was Jenny Lee Harrison looks like Bruce Springsteen's ex-wife. But it wasn't her.
I thought that's who it was.
Yeah, no, it wasn't her though. It wasn't her. But they do look alike.
Wait, really? My whole life, I thought that Bruce Springsteen's first wife was on Three's Company. I've thought this my whole life.
No, I'm gonna do a little search here. So Jenny Lee Harrison played Cindy Snow, who was the second. She came and replaced Suzanne Summers. But then Bruce Springsteen's first wife was like an actress herself and bared a striking resemblance to her. But let's see. I'm just looking here. Okay, here we go. So the first wife of Bruce Springsteen, her name was Julianne Phillips.
Oh, yeah.
And she's an actress herself, but she was not in Three's Company.
What was she in? Do we know?
She was in, some of the bigger things. She was in Fletch Lives. You know what you're thinking? Skin Deep, which was a 1989 movie that starred John Ritter. But so she did act across. She acted across from John Ritter on screen. But it was Jenny Lee Harrison who was Cindy Snow. But they do have a kind of a resemblance for sure.
I'm going to lose hours to this today on the internet, just trying to piece my life back together.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Mandela effect.
Oh, my God.
The Bernstein Bears.
Yeah, this is nuts. I don't even know. This is a bomb.
I love this because this is something that, you know, even though we're past the Cindy years by now, we're in season 7, she isn't even making guest appearances, and yet you are bringing her up, and that's great, because, and from a different angle, that I'm sure if you thought this, lots of people have thought this their whole lives as well.
Maybe I have to start like one of those Reddit things about this support group.
Yeah, it's a Mandela effect thing, but I've always known. So I'm not part of the kind of the vortex matrix that you're part of.
But were you aware that we existed as a marginalized group of people who thought that Bruce Springsteen was married the actress.
I didn't know that you guys existed.
We're misunderstood. We're often shunned. But we're out there. There's me and I'm guessing two or three other people who thought this.
And what? I see the resemblance, though. I you're not too far off, you know? It's not as if you're saying, oh, Joyce DeWitt was Bruce Springsteen's first
No, wife. That's crazy.
That's crazy. So
I can't believe this. This is nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm like, oh my God. Okay, well, I'll follow up on my own time. And then I'm going to be like, what is going on with, what are they up to now?
Right.
I'll probably get involved in that. In the same way that moments before we started recording, I was looking up Ellen Gillis, the writer, because right. I was like, oh, what else has she done? This is probably her at the peak of her powers, I imagine.
Oh, at least in my world.
And then I was disappointed to see she hasn't really written on much stuff. And I mean, she must be, you know, getting on in her years. But yeah. I wanted to see. I was like, oh, she's writing on, you know, Schitt's Creek now or whatever.
Right.
Hoping that she was still at it, but she's not.
Apparently. And I love how you throw Canadian show in there.
I know I didn't. I really just said it because I happened to finally thanks to the pandemic, I have watched the first five seasons.
Wow!
It took me a while to catch up, but I love it.
Wow.
So it's one of those things like, and I imagine people experienced this with Three's Company who didn't. You know, get it when it was showing up on whatever, 8 o'clock or whenever it was on, is that when someone tells me to watch a show too many times, then I start to back off. I start to say, well, this sounds too good for me to have time for right now. I need what, because I can't have a show take over my life. I need to find. So the pandemic is perfect because finally I was like, okay, I'm going to watch Schitt's Creek. And now it's happened. And now I'm debating buying season 6 on Amazon Prime or whether I should just wait, just be patient about it.
Wow, you're that into it. Yeah.
It's giving me comfort. I think it's a great pandemic show, not to veer off into a whole other show.
Right, no.
Talking about the greatest show.
Thanks for saying that, yeah.
I think the fact that they are sort of living in isolation, relative isolation in this tiny town.
Where you are, kind of. This is mirroring your life.
Yeah, very much. So I can relate to it and it gives me comfort to watch people with not a lot going on during, you know, as we're in this time where we can't, you know. I mean, I'm sure you probably can relate to this as better than anyone I've talked to. And in any recent times is just, it's so weird. Like I haven't left the country. Usually I'm, you know, flying somewhere every other week.
Yeah.
I haven't been anywhere.
No.
So yeah, it's crazy.
It's my whole thing about this is, I really just want someone to tell me the end point so I can at least start organizing and planning things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hot one. There's a lot of hype. Yeah, that's hard to know. But fortunately we have many episodes of Three's Company to keep us company.
Oh, definitely.
In the meantime.
And yeah, just the fact that the word company is in the title. I mean, that should give you comfort, you know.
Oh, yeah. That really, I was even watching it just now, like, because when I was a kid and I would see that show, I would think, I'm going to move to Santa Monica one day. I'm going to live with girls in Santa Monica. And even when I was watching the show, the credits when they're on the, I don't know what they're at the Los Angeles Zoo. And I thought like, oh yeah, I was supposed to move there. That was my childhood plan.
Right.
And then somehow I aggressively rejected it in my, in adulthood.
Oof, you should have kept watching Three's Company.
I know, but you know, it's all worked out. It's all worked out. But you know, maybe I'll move out there. But I thought about, you know, after this, the pandemic, when we get into life after this, maybe I'll move out there and get all those Norman Fell, Don Knotts kind of roles
that are right
on Hollywood for me. I thought about it. I was like, you know what? Now it's time.
Yeah.
Get out there. That's another thing about that show is, has it ever occurred to you, like, I was watching it and I was like, I think probably because I saw it when I was such a little kid that I can't even guess how old anyone is on the show.
Yeah. Because
I was like, they are just grown people. I have no idea how old they are.
To me, they seem like they're in their late 30s, but on the show, I think they're supposed to be like 25.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what I think. I think they seem like in their, are they in their late 30s when they're shooting it?
Geez, I'm not sure. Well, this was 82, right? So, let's see, John Ritter was born in 48, 82. So that's 30, what is that? 30, yeah, it'd
be 34.
34.
Yeah. Right? Or wait. Yeah,
34. So okay, he was in his early 30s, trying to be mid 20s.
And then Larry's probably, he seems to be a few years older than that.
Okay, so Richard Klein was born in 44. So
there we go.
Yeah, there you go, 38. Wow, he was already 38 back then. Jesus Christ.
You know another thing? I mean, this is maybe overanalyzing. I was like, everyone is really in good shape on that show.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the girls are. John is, Jack is, yeah, definitely.
Just healthy, you know, not like ripped or anything, but I was like, you know, Larry could have been, you know, the upstairs neighbor. They could have gotten a kind of a slob for that role.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but Richard Klein kept it tight.
He's supposed to be a ladies' man, so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. But the episode does really have some great moments in it. Scenes in the roller rink with the roller skates. I mean, that's just putty for John Ritter to play with comedically. Oh, yeah. So lots of good gags there. I will note that the woman who played Rita, the jewel thief, was Tori Lizdahl, and this is her second of two appearances on Three's Company. The first one was back on season 4, episode 16. She played the sister of Harvey, the guy who owned the gym, and this time she's a jewel thief. But what I found out on this episode was Tori Lizdahl put out an album called Goss and Lizdahl with her husband or ex-husband called Singin' Together back in 1974. And that has now become my most prized item to find on vinyl.
Oh, did you go to Discogs?
I went to Discogs to get the year and see the cover, and now I am on the hunt.
It's somewhere out there.
It's got to be.
It's like in someone's basement.
Well, if I can own the Tina Yothers album on vinyl, I can own the Tori Lizdahl album on vinyl.
Oh, it would be weird not to.
Yeah.
If you have the Tina Yothers album on vinyl.
Exactly.
That's a wow. I didn't expect that to come up.
No. No, so many things that you won't expect on the Regal Beagle podcast.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, you didn't know what you were walking into.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a whole universe.
Now, I had a question for you, Dave. The scene where Janet is testing the authenticity of the diamonds. And she does this on camera. She cuts the mirror of Jack to test to see if they're real diamonds. Does that count as 7 years bad luck?
Ooh, I would say no, because it didn't break. So I did find that stressful, though. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, just because, I mean, when you think about it, there was only one more season after this season of Three's Company, and then Joyce DeWitt didn't get another show after that.
What is she? What does one do? This is the scariest thing about Hollywood. Probably why I didn't move out there.
Yeah.
Because this is what happens. Like, I always, you know, not to everybody, but you can be that successful, be that iconic, and then just put out to pasture.
She's still doing work. I mean, she's still, you know, it seems like the last time she worked was in 2018.
Oh, she's fine.
Feature film. There's some, you know, television roles in 2014, 15. Usually a role every 2-3 years.
Oh, okay. So I'll move to Hollywood then.
I just hope that the pay from that one role can see you through for a couple of years.
I hope so. You know, not the roles she's booking now. They're probably, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I hope she seems like she's got her shit together, though.
She does conventions with Priscilla Barnes, Terry. They do fan conventions.
Oh, yeah. You go, you sign the photos and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's fine.